Yes, you are now listening to the sound of Sports Reports is Ordered. And it is championship weekend coming up. The three-peat is still alive, unfortunately. But we got a new beast in the East. We got college football championship reaction. The Ohio State Buckeyes finally come through. The Big Ten back-to-back champions? Woo! So we're going to break it down for you. Myself and the one and only world famous, world renowned, born in Texas, raised in VA, representing everything New Jerusalem. And he wants all you losers out there that don't get swiped the correct way. New Jersey is the diner capital of the world.
Absolutely.
More capitals, more diners than any state in the United States. So come on, have a seat and actually talk to a woman in person. Do that. He is Mr. Logic.
Great food at all of them.
Do not bring feelings to a fact fight.
Don't do it.
So, like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all the free things. Do all the good things. All right, Mr. Logical. Lots of football to talk about. So out of all the things that have happened this week, there is one thing that stood out to me more than anything else. The ACC has decided, well, they haven't decided, they're talking about changing the format on how they select their champion. So this year, you know, they were just like everybody else. You know, you play your regular season, whoever has the best two records play in a championship game. The winner of that game gets an automatic playoff spot. Well, I guess the ACC got tired of all the SEC complaining and they decided, well, hey, like, what would it be like if we had a mini ACC tournament? So how does that look? So for example, this season, SMU would have got the championship and a, you know, buy in the playoffs. Miami and Clemson would have played. Hopefully the winner of that game would have got a playoff spot because the ACC ended up with two teams. So, you know, but going forward, that's not the only idea that ACC had, Mr. Logical. Their other idea was, let's do a mini tournament, one through four tournament style. So you would have had, in that scenario, you would have had SMU against Syracuse. Sorry for mentioning them, Miami fans. And then we would have got that Miami-Clemson game as the 2-3 matchup. Winners play. Winner gets the playoff spot. What you think, Mr. Logical?
First four shot of Syracuse, Malachi James. Met him in the barbershop. Met his father a couple weeks ago. Outstanding young man. Has the record for the fastest 100 time in state New Jersey high school history. So shout out to Syracuse. But I hate that idea from the beginning, from its inception, from the concept to the logic behind it, the reason. I hate every single thing about it. I don't like any aspect of this idea at all. The problem that I have with it mainly is they allowed the SEC and the Big Ten to bully them into taking 60 or 58% of the pot in like the next couple of years. That's the problem. I think everybody else is going to get like 11%. And I think the SEC and the Big Ten are splitting. I think they're getting 29% each. So instead of addressing the fact that you got little broed by these bigger conferences, you come up with something else that makes you look more like a little bro. Like, well, you know what? We're going to. It's dumb. Just do what SEC does. You make sure you highlight your best schools. You funnel. You ensure that the people in place at these universities follow the mold that's set by the SEC. The SEC, only thing they do is they get talent and they turn their school into football culture. Everything goes to football because the swim team probably got some nice hoodies because of the Nike deal that Alabama football team really drives. Same thing with LSU. Like, you just have to understand the hierarchy of things at your university. Getting into the college football playoffs by holding out can still get you voted out. Because the committee can be like, well, you didn't even play in your conference tournament to avoid the potential that you were going to lose that game and not get in. For that, we don't feel that you're national championship contenders, because you're not even willing to battle your own conference.
Right.
How am I going to put you in the battle against 11 other teams? So it's just, I mean, everyone's grasping at straws because it's new. In my opinion, like I said, we'll get into it. I think it worked, you know, with some tweaks. I don't think it needs to be this drastic. Like, you ever been on like a, you know, we've done the military, you know, for combined over 40 years. We used to have down days at Hill Air Force Base, right? We would have, like, you had knock it off, and then we have those down days with different levels of leadership, would talk to the wing commander and the chief, and you could say whatever you want. It was very candid. And a lot of things came out of that was very simple. It was like, listen, we're flying too much for the amount of people we have. You had an idea that's not sustainable for the people we have. We've had this meeting. Let's go for it. We didn't sit in this meeting and say, you know what? I think we need to fly from 3 to 6 a.m. and then from 9 to noon. And no, it's like, listen, we're flying too much. We don't have the people. That's our problem. Let's start there. The ACC is like, you guys don't play. You don't have enough good teams compared to the other conferences. Let these other conferences build up their teams as much as they can. Encourage a transfer portal, workshops, whatever kind of meetings you need to have on Zoom or in place, mm-hmm. or your little private meetings. Get your teams better to where now the SEC is basically living off of the success of three schools. we can go back and forth, and anyone can get in my comments and at me, whatever the case may be. The SEC is living off the success of a good Alabama program, LSU, and Georgia. The rest of them are just as up and down as any other conference. The Big Ten, you give me a good Michigan every once in a while, you give me a steady Penn State, and you give me a pretty outstanding Ohio State consistently. Everyone's living off of that. Everyone's eating off of that. Like back in the day when everyone in the Pac-10 was eating off of USC and Oregon, or the Pac-10, Pac-12, whatever the case may be. So ACC just has to prop up Miami, prop up maybe Clemson, Florida State. Get those three schools going, and that way when Duke goes 9-3 one year, we can be arguing for them like Ole Miss was trying to lobby to get themselves in, strictly off the strength of Georgia and everybody else.
Well, you know, so like the biggest problem with a situation like this for me, just going off of the things that college football fans say. So let's go to last year, for example. Florida State finished 13-0. You know, and granted, you know, Jordan Travis got injured, but let's say he didn't. You know, so they're 13-0. They go into this tournament, play Georgia Tech, and then you would have had Louisville and NC State in the other game. But what if Florida State would have lost one of those games? You know what I mean? And you know what I mean? Like, we know, like, now fast forward and give Jordan Travis that injury in the ACC title game. You got a one-loss Florida State team that wouldn't have got in still, probably. You know, so from that standpoint, you only stand to screw yourself, because the SEC and the Big Ten right now are the only conferences that can actually suffer losses and not be eliminated early. So, like, if you're Virginia Tech and you come out and lose a game to NC State week 5, because of perception, NC State is thought of to be weak. So that's a bad loss for you no matter how you spin it. So you're going to have to win out automatically, get that ACC title spot, because I can't guarantee you are at large. Whereas
Miami and Ohio State were in the same boat, and Ohio State just stayed in the playoff.
Right. Ohio State stayed in because probably, I mean, granted, who they lost to probably mattered, but also you can't even say that because Syracuse finished 3rd in the ACC. So it just depends on your conference perception.
It just depends on the perception of your conference. Right. And,
And that's the problem within itself.
What hood you live in. What hood determines how hard you are.
And that's the problem within
itself. From Brooklyn, you're good to go. We've like going from Albany. Like, you from Albany? But, well, if you're from Albany, you might have to punch somebody in the face. And so you're like, yeah, cool. Dudes from Brooklyn are doing their thing. But we getting busy.
Dudes from Omaha, so get down. You know what I'm saying?
You know what I'm saying? Like, Bud Crawford got to go out there. He has to really prove to people, like, yo, yeah, don't get it twisted. Omaha's getting it cracking, too. So it's like,
yeah, so you know, when I
in Nebraska,
so when you look at it, that's the problem within itself, because we're still having the same conversation about most deserving and, you know, best. And you can't define best because that's subjective. So I know it's easy to see Ohio State versus Miami and you think, I gotta say Ohio State. But if those two teams played this year, I'm not sure Ohio State wins that game. But we'll never know. And that's the problem with college football, is that even though we settle it on the field, we don't. So to your point, I do think that the 12-team playoff worked, but it depends on what you were looking for. Because if you were just looking for, I need a team other than the top, let's say four, you know, just for practical conversation, the top four win the national title, you know, no. So where it didn't make sense was what happened to Oregon that we talked about, where you're the number one seed. You played Ohio State, the eighth seed, the second round. So we ended up with the national title being the seventh and eighth seeds. So that sounds awesome, because you can't say the one seed automatically won, the two seed automatically won. But at the same time, if we had a proper playoff structure, Oregon just got to go win the game. But for the way that it was set up, yeah, Oregon should have probably been playing. I don't even know. I got to think about it. I can't even think right now. But you know, but that's the thing. Like, they probably would have
played Arizona State, right?
No, because Arizona State had a bye.
But weren't they 12? They would have been 12.
No, they were 12 in the ranking. They were 4 in the playoff seeding. So 12 was Boise. Oh, I'm sorry. 12 was Clemson. I'm sorry. 12 was Clemson.
Okay. So whoever won out in that first round, they should have reseeded one through whatever. One plays the it's always weird. Lowest or highest. We'll go with lowest ranking team. So if there was a 10 available, one would play 10, whatever the case may be.
Right.
So that's an easy fix. I think people are kind of clamoring, like, oh my God, I can't. Once again, we had the meeting. We all sat down, and it's like, hey, what's going on the flight line? We're flying too much. You need to slow down. Cool. The 12-team playoff. What's going on? Like, how can we fix it? Simple. I think you keep the buys, because that's an incentive for people to play their championship game. It's also a way for teams to play themselves in, i.e. Clemson. And you get the buy. Just leave the buy the way it is. Very similar to the NFL, where Tampa Bay got a home playoff game, even though Washington and Minnesota both
had and Green Bay.
And Green Bay had better records. Just keep it simple. Like, hey, you win these conferences, you get the bye. That's just leave it. Even if it's the whatever the Pac-12 turns into, if whatever it is, leave that way. Then you set it up the same way you had it this year, except after the first round, you reseed. Maybe you don't have these gaps in between, and you can play, like, Ohio State got a home game versus Tennessee. Maybe you play, I guess you would have to play that bowl game anyway.
Well, see, I was going to go reverse.
Well, like I said, I just think you reseed. You have the teams. Mm-hmm. I like the buys. You reseed after the first round of games. That way it's, if you're the top ranked team, theoretically you should get the worst team of the, you know, the available at that point, it'd be 8 teams. And then you go from, like, and you play it out, and then the next round you do the same thing. As long as the winner plays at a certain location, as long as the location standard, then it doesn't matter who the two teams are. So if the winner of the Rose Bowl played their next game and it was going to be at State Farm Arena in Phoenix, Arizona, then that's where it is. So long as people know where to buy their plane tickets and what games to purchase, that's fine. But don't give the number one team the arguably the best team in the country in the second round on a neutral field. That seemed a little unfair as far as like, you know, you go through this entire season, you go undefeated, you win your conference, and then you get rewarded by playing the second team in your comp or the third team in your conference based off of like, I guess, in the season. I think they were closer to four because they had two losses. But we all understood that Ohio State was one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, I picked them to win the national title preseason, second year in a row. I got that right, by the way. But it's one of those things where, for me, maybe you just need to figure out, like, you got to pick something and stick to it, you know, one way or the other. You can make additions, you could take things away, but you don't need to rechange the whole thing. But what I was going to say was just establish a criteria. Conference champion, automatic bye. If that's your structure, that's your structure. The one thing that I think I would like to add potentially is a second home game and not have the bowls get involved.
I was trying to figure that out, but once again, you don't have enough games to cover the bowl games, I don't think.
Well, it depends on what you want to do with that. It depends on what you want to do with that.
Unless you want to make
you would just probably have to, or you could just add bowls to the playoffs if you wanted to.
Or you make the original New Year's Six, right? You got Orange Bowl.
The Orange, Cotton.
Peach.
Fiesta Rose.
Rose Bowl.
And the other one that I can't think of. Was it the Cotton Bowl? Did you say Cotton Bowl?
Orange Fiesta,
Rose.
Well, Peach. First, we'll call it the other bowl. You make those six games six very intriguing high-level matchups. 10-2 teams, your 9-3 Syracuse versus your 9-3 Ole Miss, the ACC versus the SEC. You just make those six bowl games marquee matchups out of the other 12 teams that are kind of around the 12 teams that could have been in the playoffs. So, because like I said, you get that pot of 16 teams. Instead of having like automatic, like, hey, Army's going to play in this bowl, end up playing a 5-7 Marshall team, just really step back and say, okay, the New Year's Six, we don't want neutral sites for our college football playoff games. So we're going to put the best other 12 teams or other six intriguing.
Yeah, it's almost like an NIT without a trophy game. Or like a without a tournament.
So you'll get Miami versus
South Carolina.
Miami, South Carolina in the probably a bowl down south so you can sell it out.
Mm-hmm. And see, and that's the original problem in the first place is that due to crowds and fan bases and so on and so forth, the bowl games are tied into certain conferences. You know what I mean? Like the Liberty Bowl down at Memphis, the AAC plays in that bowl and it's usually Memphis. So, you know, so I get what you're saying. I just think
that way Oregon should have got a home game in this playoff.
Yeah, being number right. And I was going to bring that up. And that's the other part of it is that these fans, when you look at the fans trying to plan to get to these games, you know, so you were Ohio State, right? You had a home game, then you went to the Rose Bowl, then you played Texas down here in the Cotton Bowl to go to the compressor. So, you know, so as a fan, having that second home game might matter. You know, let me go to these two home games, and the Ohio State fans that live in Miami can go to a game in Miami or whatever the case may be, so on and so forth, you know, or you always got destinations. But the reason that I say that is to back up your point, because Oregon's first game in the playoff was the Rose Bowl. And then they would have had to turn around, play Ohio State, and just the way that the bracket played out, and you know this happens, but they would have played Texas in Dallas as the one seed. So you would have had the best eight seed, apparently, because Ohio State won the title anyway. And then you would have played back-to-back the second-place SEC team on their turf, in their state. So you can't
a byproduct of college football and just college sports in general, because they sell the location and the game is somewhat secondary to the location. Because the NCAA, we talk about the basketball tournament, the location is wherever it is. It could be next year, it could be in Minnesota, but they're going to be playing inside of the, you know, whatever. I think the USA Bank Stadium is what it's called, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's nothing to do with where the best basketball is going to come from, because NCAA sells the location. I just feel like if you're going to give a, if a team earned the number one spot, you have to figure out a way to get them a home game just for the fans and the advantage. You want to give the number one team the advantage. In the NFL, Kansas City had a bye, Detroit had a bye, and their first playoff game was on their home turf. There has to be a way to figure it out. Either get rid of the bye or play it earlier, or don't have like the 2 week break. Like, just figure out a way to where you can get them a home game. If they're gonna get a bye, you got to figure out a way to get a home game. Especially with Boise. Boise has the blue turf. It'd have been a great home game.
Mm-hmm. And then the last thing, real quick, before we skip over to the national title game, I saw the funniest headline. I did read the story, but the headline itself was hilarious. Is UNLV UCLA football game in Las Vegas part of an initiative to get UNLV to the Big Ten?
The Big Ten has 18 teams already.
They want to get to 20, I'm sure, but it ain't UNLV.
I mean, it's a decent size. It's a popular market. I give them that. I don't know how big the Vegas market is. I don't think Vegas as a city is that large as far as population. It's a popular market. Honestly, they could do no wrong. They're the proverbial catbird seat. The SEC can bring in Tulane. They can bring in, they can steal SMU from the ACC. The SEC could do whatever they want because they're kind of established as these pillars of the sport. They could do no wrong. Their best programs are blue blood, traditional, legacy, historic, like programs. So they're never going to fall off. Whereas the ACC, what's their powerhouse? Their powerhouse is based in basketball. So they have to revamp their image every year. They got to come back and resubscribe and pay that initial fee again every single year. Whereas the SEC walks right into restaurants. They whip out a table for them. The Big Ten walks right in. They whip out a table for them. They are locked in. The rest of these people are have to clamor for it. The Pac-12 should not be the Pac-2 or whatever it is now. But because I guess they weren't viewed as these blue bloods in this region of America that's football is religion damn near.
Hey, they're back up to 7 schools now. They're like the Pac-7 or the Pac-8 now. But they ain't going to have the stature, nowhere near the stature that they exactly had before. You know, so overall, to close this up, yeah, I think that the playoff worked for the most part. There's a few tweaks that we would like to see made, but I'm satisfied with it.
Yeah, I think it worked. If Boise was the number 8 seed and ran the table, I think people would want to change it. But since it was Ohio State, I believe the only – there's probably going to be more changes. People are probably going to want more teams because they feel like teams got left out. That's not a valid enough reason for me. As far as like that product, going from 2 with the BCS to 4 with the college football playoffs and now 12, I'm like, I think 12 is deep enough. You don't want the 32nd ranked team playing against the number one ranked team in the first round because that score would be 64-2.
And you know what's funny? We were on here talking about, yo, they going to get Indiana, man. I don't know if Indiana is safe. And then we fast forward, and both of the teams that beat Indiana played in the compressor for the national title last night. So, Mr. Logical, I'm going to start with you because you picked Notre Dame to win.
Yep.
Where did it all go wrong?
It went wrong because I picked Notre Dame to win, not based off what I thought Ohio State was capable of, is what I thought. I brought feelings to a fact fight, which I shouldn't have done. I just thought that they would play tight. I thought Ryan Day would play tight, call it tight. I just thought that it would be a lot. I thought it'd be more reminiscent of the Michigan game because Notre Dame is built a lot like Michigan. Big, strong players, control the clock, run the ball. Not a lot of explosive playmakers on the outside. Quarterback isn't like this blue chip, I'm going to get drafted guy. It's one of those just like, you know, just like a gamer. Like just a guy, a gritty gamer. And I thought that they would get into this fight back and forth to where the gritty gamer would make the third and seven RPO get 8 yards. But it was Ohio State who was like, yeah, Will Howard, carry us to the promised land. And they looked like the team that had the most talent in the playoffs. And they put it on display, what, 4 games in a row?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you got to tip your cap to them. It's like I said, it wasn't a slight to Ohio State. I just thought that at some point the momentum had to slow down. And now being on this big stage, I thought the coach had a huge target on his back and his face and his forehead and the side of his head and his chest from everyone, the AD, the fans, the media. I thought everybody was ready to just, you know, fire a bullet off into Ryan Day. And I thought he would approach the game that way where he would be tight and not have a good game plan. But he just was like, yo, Chip, man, let's run up the score so I can get this contract extension and beat Michigan next year, hopefully.
Well, see, initially, when I turned on this game, you know, Notre Dame literally walked down the field. You know, 10 plays, it was 15 plays, it was like 10 minutes long, you know, but there was something that happened on that drive. Even though Notre Dame scored and got a touchdown, there was something that told me the game was over. Remember the other night when we were previewing the game?
True.
I made this point about how with a quarterback like Riley Leonard, Notre Dame, they organize and construct a lot of runs, design runs for him. But you want to be able to call them when you want to call them and not be dictated on when to call them. And like I brought up the left tackle being out. Now you got people in Riley Leonard's face. So now he's running even more than you intend him to. So on that first drive, they called 9 rush plays for him. So that told me that Julian Love was really banged up. I'm sorry, Jeremiah Love is really banged up. So then, you know, said Riley Leonard had the Willie Beeman moment. And I said, this ain't Donovan McNabb. Like, Donovan McNabb is more nerves. Like, this guy is beat up and, like, he's not used to that output so quickly. It's like the first time I tried to drink 12 ice houses, you know, before I went to the club. You know what I'm saying? It's about like that.
Drink ice house again. It ruined my night. Oh, it ruined my night in Zurich, Switzerland. Oh, Rob the Mexican can tell you.
Oh yeah,
my night drinking those goddamn ice houses. But keep
going. I definitely got an off camera ice house story. So Riley Leonard on the night, 17 rushes total. 9 of those was on that first drive. But when you look at it, the Notre Dame running backs, 2 of them combined, only had 7 carries. So once Ohio State got the ball, they just said, that's what you got. Watch this. And they just Ohio State it for about 15 minutes, got out to a big lead. And then something that you talked about happened. Because you made the comment of, you know, is Ohio State going to get up, take that foot off the gas? You know, and then, like, before you could blink, Notre Dame gets a touchdown. Like, okay, yeah, but they still got to get the 2. They got the two.
16, no big deal, yeah.
And then Marcus Freeman made the rookie mistake. You know, 9 minutes, and some change left. 31-15 in field goal range, but 4th and 2. So I said 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So you're going to need to score twice, get 2-point conversions.
So you essentially got to score.
You can't take the kick there. You can't take the kick there.
I almost was Nick Wright of First Things First. Like I said, it's a show I watch a lot.
Yeah, I know we go beef about this.
No, he he had an argument that would have swayed me if it's three coaches on the sideline and I had a 5-minute TV timeout. Let's hypothetically say that. Like, for whatever reason, the lights go out in the compressor. They get a few minutes to talk about it right before this play call. I'm locked in to your point. It's not two touchdowns. It's two possessions. I think if I've ever get an opportunity to be an offensive coach or a football coach, my goal would be to go up a possession every time I have the ball if I'm in scoring range. So if I'm up 14 points and it's 4th and 1 from the 6, I'm going to kick the field goal just to go up another possession. So at a minimum, you have to get the ball 3 times. I just got to stop you 1, and that extends. Like, I now we're back and forth. So that's my leverage there. It's like, okay, cool. I'm up another possession. So if you're Freeman, you're now 16. I got to get a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. I'm inside the 10. Worst case scenario, you give the ball back to Ohio State and you're in the same boat. You're still down 2 possessions. I know it's still 2 touchdowns and 2-point conversions.
That ain't the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario, they go get another touchdown.
Well,
they get that field goal you're talking about.
If you kick the field goal and you're down 13 and they go get another touchdown, you're in the same boat. So it's like your circumstances aren't really improved by being down 13.
No, there. I'm talking about the other team, though. Like, if you're down 14 or 16, they go down there and get a field goal and make it 19, then that adds a possession on for you.
That adds a possession. So, like, to me, kicking the field goal there is a 14-minute decision. Under 10 minutes, you got to go for the touchdown and 2-point conversion. Because, like I said, you're in the same boat. You got to get the ball.
I told you. You know what this is? This is Baltimore Buffalo again. The John Harbaugh when he went for 2. Because I'm going to say the exact same thing that I said in that scenario. Because back then, you know, Lamar Jackson threw a pass on 4th and 1.
We talked about that.
We talked for like 3-4 hours just about that. Yeah.
This is pre-podcast.
Yeah. And I, my whole point about it was, if you just look at the tenor of the game, the teams were moving the ball up and down the court or the field. So you got to get points, in my opinion. But there was only 2 minutes left when he made that decision. So you get the 2-point or you get the touchdown on 4th down. Now they got to go get a touchdown versus they just need a field goal. So they miss the 4th down. Buffalo gets the ball at the 1. And then they go down, get the game-winning field goal. Mr. Logical says they should have just took the points.
No, that's what it was. Lamar threw a pick in the end zone.
Oh, it was a pick. And but it was 4th down, though. Yeah. Yeah.
It was 4th and goal from the 1.
Yeah.
A field goal would have put him up 6. John
Harbaugh. Yeah, because it was 23-20. It was 23-20.
John Harbaugh said he was concerned that they were going to get a touchdown. I'm like, well, at least put your defense in a position to where they only have to guard the end zone. Everything else is free reign. Stay calm, stay in your shell. Everything's all good. Guard the end zone. What Freeman did last night, he put the onus on the defense. Well, with the field goal, like, yo, I need 2 more stops from you in the next 9 minutes. Whereas you get the touchdown there in the 2-point conversion. They only need 1 stop.
Right.
If you don't get it, you need 2. But kicking a field goal, and I still got to get you 2 stops. People talk about the points because people care about the offense. the defense, like, yo, I still got to get two stops on a team that ran and up that's 31 why when we had on this own row.
And that's why when we had this conversation. And that's why when we had this conversation, I made the point of, like, the way I think the reason that we were missing each other in that argument, and the same reason we're going to miss each other right now, is because to some degree we're arguing from two different, not just philosophies, but you know, because from from your standpoint, you would basically take the field goal 99 out of 100 times.
I would take the field goal if I was putting myself up points, because I can control that, and I give my defense one.
Talking from the Notre Dame perspective of the ones down by 16.
The Notre Dame perspective, I'm going for the touchdown.
Okay.
And the 2-point conversion.
Okay. Then
my defensive piece is I need a stop. With because basically it was 4th and 2. So you figure, say they scored that next play. That next play takes 8 to 10 seconds. So it's 9:27 when you kick the ball back to Ohio State. I can gather my defense around and say, one stop, we get the ball back, we're going to tie this game. But if I kick a field goal, and we're down 13, I got to go to my defense and say, I need two stops in the next 9.5 minutes on a team that ran up 31 consecutive points on you tonight. Not like a different game. It's like tonight, this team with those five stars have been like running down the field on you.
This is live. So
I need two more stops from you. I won't say die on my shield, but I would have gone for the touchdown there, because no matter what, you need two stops.
Okay, that's what I was going to say, yeah.
People talk about the offensive side of it, but it's like defensively, that defense wins championships. And I think sometimes people have to like be the voice of the defense. You're sending your defense back out there. I think they were getting pummeled all night long, and they came up with a couple stops here and there. But for the most part, they were handled. And then you get them to 3rd and 11. The defense did their job. And the defense coordinator is like, okay, cool. We're going to go single coverage, no safety help on the guy who would be the number one pick in the NFL draft in 90 days. In the most crucial moment, down 8, 3rd and 11, because if that pass is defended properly, or if that coverage is called properly, Ohio State's like, okay, cool. We'll kick it deep and we'll put our defense on the field. But to just, like, even if you're trying to sell out for the run, I can stop the run and still double.
So 3rd and 11, right?
3rd and 11.
You know how many yards that play got?
44 or something like that?
56. They went over half the field. They went over half the field on 3rd and 11. That's crazy to think about.
The play, the route was, the DB played it as best as he could, because he looked like he was running, like he was running the post. And he just ran him to the hash and then just faded back out to the sideline. I would have put him in a better position. I wouldn't have him out there on an island in that moment. But I agree. Like you said, it's hindsight 2020, but I don't
think. And now the defensive coordinator is being interviewed by the Cincinnati Bengals. But you know, he got the interview today. But that's the thing. Like, so I thought we were going to disagree because you were going off of the perspective of somebody being in the lead and I'm having a decision to make. With Marcus Freeman,
so much control you have in the game, and I think he with the ball in your hand, you have control. You have to dictate the game from that perspective. You can't put it up to chance, because getting two stops was putting it up to chance.
Right,
putting up one stop was like a little bit more hopeful.
See, and that's the other thing I was going to bring up, because like usually when I have those decisions, the game script matters, all that matters. You know, is this a defensive game? Is this an offensive game? That might change the way I think about it. So when I was looking at last night, the reason that I felt Marcus Freeman should have went for it is if you're playing the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow throws it for 320 yards and there's still 6 minutes left in the game, you're pretty sure that you got to stay in some kind of dime or nickel set. You know what I mean? When you're playing against those old school Jacksonville Jaguars, Maurice Jones-Drew and Fred Taylor, you know, if they ran for 200 yards on you, you go stack the box, you go do all this stuff. So the reason that I bring all that up to tie it up, they go for the field goal. They miss it. At that point in the game, there were 9 minutes and some change left.
Yeah, like 9:30 after the missed kick is about 9:31, 9:32, something like
that. Yeah. So with that being said, and with that thought in mind, it was the run game that was gashing you up. So when I looked at it, you got to go for the points because this team ran for 214 yards on you. It's 9 minutes left in the game. So when they get the ball back, and by the way, their offensive coordinator loves to run the football. Y pobrecito, you know what I'm saying? When my boss catches going, chop your head off like a rabbit, whatever that's saying. You know what I'm talking about, Scarface. That's when a rabbit gets fucked. You know, but so that's what it is. Ohio State deserved the national title. You know, they were, from the standpoint of the two teams playing last night. And when you go back and look at their season, you're like, yo, they lost to Michigan. Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois. So if the national champion would have won, we would have complained about that. But with Ohio State,
I saw somebody in one of the sports group that said Notre Dame didn't belong. And it's like, oh my God. Like
why are y'all like this?
Why are you like this? And I chimed in. I was like, listen, yeah, they were getting dominated, true, but they were down one possession with a stop on third down to get the ball back to potentially tie the game up. Like,
right. I mean,
you don't ask to be down in the game, but if you were like, hey, if a coach is like, listen, you're getting blown out and you got your JV squad in the game and the end of the in 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter, or you have your starting, you know, defense out there, and if they get this stop, you have an opportunity to score a touchdown, go for two, tie the game, go to overtime. I think you would take that. In a game where you probably were outmatched talent for talent in your key areas on the field.
Right. All right. So, yeah. So, congratulations to the Buckeyes. Let's see who 2-5 picks in August. So, that brings us over to the Sunday sport that sometimes plays on Saturday.
Flag. I threw it right now.
Got some.
To piss off all the. It's rigged. Shut the fuck up. Shut up.
So
please
look.
Stop saying it's rigged. It's not rigged. It is not rigged. It's not rigged. It's not rigged.
All right.
Bad calls happen every game.
What?
But if you go into a game, it's called confirmation bias. People look it up, Google it, Wikipedia. If you look at something, like if you wake up and you say today's gonna be a bad day, and your hot water isn't as hot as it normally is when you go take a shower, that confirms your bias that you're going to have a bad day.
Well,
if you look at every call made in a Chiefs game that goes the Chiefs way, it's going to be that way. I'll go back to Cincinnati, then I'll let Mike do his thing because I had this conversation. I had this loaded. And I'm not even like a Kansas City homer. I'm just a homer for logic. Kansas City against Cincinnati in the game with a pass interference was called on 4th and 16. Converted on 4th and 6 and had a very weak hands to the face call on 4th down after they converted their 4th down called against them. And then the very next play, Cincinnati had the pass interference. I had a conversation with my pops. He's like, they're always getting those calls. I'm like, what about the call right before where they got the conversion? They're moving the ball and the rest like, nope. That's the flag. They got calls on them too. The thing that Kansas City has that other teams don't have is poise. And we'll get into it from there. Keep going.
So, yeah, like you see this in, this ain't a football thing. You know, I say this when, you know, I watch college basketball and I'm watching a Duke game or I'm watching a Kansas game. You know, when I look at college football, I'm like, Alabama really didn't commit holding all season, you know, so on and so forth. But when I say all of those names and throw it in a pie, when you pick it out, it makes sense because those are the established blue blood programs or teams of their sport. So Kansas City's going to get these calls. That's first and foremost. Nothing you could do about it. And, you know, so when you look at the numbers, because, you know, stat guy, when you look at the numbers, the Chiefs are right in line with the rest of the league when it comes to total penalties. You know what I mean? So they don't get penalized any less than anybody. But with these championship teams, with these, they win championships. So there's skill, there's talent, there's coaching, there's luck. And every now and again, there's a call. So, you know, so from that stand, Tuck rule, right? So from right, that
real quick, I don't want to get ahead of us, but I want you to think about this real quick and give me a quick answer.
Yeah.
There was a call that I feel was a bad call in the Buffalo game. How many videos or TikToks or anything has been shared to you of the call that I think is bad?
Probably you don't zero.
Do you know what call I'm talking about?
I don't.
The end of the second quarter pass interference when Keon Coleman shoved Darius White to the ground and they called a pass interference on the corner that allowed Buffalo to get the touchdown.
I got to look at that again. Because I think it was pass interference.
If you look, even in slow motion, it wasn't pass interference because Keon Coleman literally two hands shoved him like a bouncer trying to kick him out the club. But what I'm saying is that call benefited Buffalo.
Right.
And I know a lot of those pass interference calls are very subjective. I know I don't want to derail it, but it's like
my opinion is
I think that call was not as egregious as the Kansas City calls, which I can admit were a bit egregious, but there's no TikTok clips of that. There's no Facebook videos of that. There's no Instagram videos of that. I don't know if there's a Baltimore player soundbite of them talking about that play. Whereas everybody else, once again, confirmation bias is like, oh, because I fell short of my responsibilities, there's a built-in excuse. And it's the stuff that everybody else sees. And it's like, Sam Darnold got his head ripped off in the end zone against the Rams and wasn't called, which then put them behind Detroit, ultimately forcing them to go on the road for their road playoff game. No one talks about that.
Right. Yeah, so the thing is, though, Kansas City, and this is the first time I've really thought about it during a season. Usually this pops up during the playoffs. Like, for example, I know that I spent plenty of time talking about how the Chiefs got away with two very blatant holds in that Super Bowl against the 49ers.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? That's the kind of stuff that it happens so people can – it's such a high leverage moment that people can go back and remember it. You know what I mean? They don't remember a call that happened in week two unless it was super egregious. You know, like, for example, I used to argue about that Golden Tate touchdown on Monday Night Football with the replacement refs.
Yeah, because they – one said touchdown, one wave timeout, yeah. One wave touchback.
But unless there's outside of that being Monday Night Football, if that was just a regular week, whatever game that was, Seattle fans might remember it, Green Bay fans might remember it, but we ain't gonna talk about it probably like just day to day. So when you look at
Washington Kansas City, they got called those for type a face mask that wasn't a face mask.
They did.
No one sent out a video about that.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, you know, because the Chiefs just seem, they seem to get away with it more than everybody else does. I would argue they, for it. And like I said, I remember the example I brought up the other night was Baylor against Duke 2010 Elite Eight. You know, this is the John Shire championship team. You know, like every time it was just like that Warriors-Cavs game I always talk about where Duke just led wire to wire. They would go up 12. Baylor would cut it down to 6. Oh, that's a charge. Like, get it down to 7 again. Oh, that's a charge. It was like, so some teams do have a preponderance to get these type of calls. The difference is those are the teams that would beat you anyway.
When you play with skill, good luck. What happened?
Sean, you know, it,
that's what it boils down to a lot of times. When it comes down to, because like I said, the Bengals, I'll choose the Bengals game as a prime example. The play before where Kansas City converted their fourth down, it got called back. Most teams would not be able to regroup in the 40 seconds it takes for the ball to be marked off in the penalty. A new play call comes in, and now we got to regroup and get another play call in. Most teams would just crumble. Coach would make a bad decision.
The Sunday night game against y'all. You know, people talk about the pass interference or whatever it was in the end zone.
Yeah, Atlanta had the ball back, and on 4th-and-1, they overloaded the left side and tossed the ball behind. It's like, we all know where the ball was going.
But real quick, you know, sorry, Texans. This is the same team that lost a game where they secured 5 interceptions. They outgained the Chiefs in this game, 336-212. 149 to 50 yards rushing, 187 to 162 in passing yards. They still lost because the Chiefs got 8 sacks and they decided to go, oh, yeah, that Travis Kelce.
Yeah, number 87, the dude that we talk about all the time. Let's single cover him. It was some plays where Travis Kelce was catching the ball and the closest person there was the umpire in the middle of the field.
That's
it
nuts.
Was so, like on that long run when I think Al-Sharif tried to like punch the ball out. At that point, he's got it up here. 6'5", 2'6". It's a big dude. You're not going to get your arm in here to just tackle him.
Yeah.
But instead, you punch and he gets like 18 to 20 more yards out of it. So, yeah. I'm not saying, listen, I get that the calls were bad, but the system in place does not help you in that moment. There's no review for 15-yard penalties. I heard on Rich Eisen's show, he was like, listen, any 15-yard penalty should be reviewed by someone. The issue is pass interference, a call like that, in slow motion, it looks like pass interference.
Right.
Any kind of helmet.
Well, they would have got that Baltimore call right if they would have looked at it. If they would have considered that, you know what I mean?
They would have considered it and looked at it. They would have seen... Even
Romo?
No, the ref that they have,
Gene. Oh, Gene Tessitore. Yeah, Territory. Yeah.
He said, I would have liked to seen a no call there.
Right.
Because he's like, they're both locked up. And on top of the fact that the wide receiver was the only one on his 2 feet when the ball hit the ground. It's like,
right.
I would have liked the no call there. Well, with the Texans, I think, you, like I said, if you wake up in the morning thinking your day is going to be bad and the water in the shower isn't hot enough, I think it interrupted their entire flow. They never
laws of attraction.
The penalty when Mahomes was sliding in slow motion in a replay would have been, yep, both of you hit him in the head. One hit him with a forearm. Was it as aggressive as we think it is? Probably not. But on a replay, which you don't really want, because replays show all kinds of stuff, you hit them in the head. You probably hit people in the head on every single replay if they slowed it down enough. So that's what it was like.
Pause.
You would have hit pause. They would have got that penalty anyway. But when they get the ball back, they gave up a couple of sacks, bad sacks. They didn't get any touchdowns. The opening kickoff was like a 70-yard return, penalty. You got the guy pushing his coach. And it's like, I didn't get the game on before that. I still don't know what the hell happened.
He was the one that got the penalty on the kickoff.
So he made the tackle and pulled the helmet and knocked the ball out. So when he knocked the ball out, He celebrated thinking they recovered it, took his helmet off, and they got the penalty afterwards.
Yeah, and then I don't know how that led to the push though. That's the thing.
I thought he was celebrating.
I did too.
Maybe they yelled at him and he just was upset thinking he didn't commit the penalty that they called him for, because like you said, everyone who did a post game interview mentioned the fact that it was going to be them versus the refs. Right. So to come out the opening play, once again, my shower's as high as I think it should be. The opening play, you commit a penalty, you get flagged, and now all the stuff you heard all week, all the videos you consumed all week, all this information you took in all week that made you feel like you were going to be behind the eight ball is coming to fruition. And we are 11 seconds into this football game, and they played the game that way.
Yeah, so I was going to go somewhere else, but since we've been talking about it a little bit, where did it go wrong for the Ravens?
The Ravens just... I said it for multiple weeks with the Ravens. We know what your rundowns look like. We know what your passing down situations look like.
Right.
So when Henry was getting stopped on first and second down, I think like that kind of that feeling just kind of like resonated with the sideline. Like, oh, Buffalo's selling out for the run. I would have liked some first down Lamar runs to the right. He's right-handed. He likes throwing it to the tight ends. Tight ends coming from the backside of the formation, across the formation, like on the two-point conversion. We'll get into this, but like that two-point conversion was like a designed rollout. I like getting the ball in the left hash with Derrick Henry, and you play action stretch to the left with Lamar. You get the defense leaning to their right, and then you bootleg with Lamar. You leak a tight end out, or you let him keep it.
Right.
You put the fear of Henry, Andrews, likely Lamar, all in that play. It could get 4 yards. You pull a guard out. Maybe you got a guard out there that's potentially blocking for Lamar. Just off of that action, I could have given it to Henry. Okay, we got to worry about that. Likely came across from the backside, and he's dragging across. He's on like a 10-yard route. Andrews is kind of in the flat. And you got a guard that pulled out. He's in front of Lamar. Lamar can keep it. Everything's legal. All the linemen are out, you know, less than 1 yard. Now the defensive coordinator has to be like, what do I do if I can't guard all four of these things? And they can do it from any kind of action they set up because how dynamic Lamar is and how much he likes looking for the tight end. I just felt like they didn't exploit that enough. You didn't have Zay Flowers. Just keep running Bateman on those routes because Bateman got open.
So I was right the other day.
Was that?
Like your Todd Monken shots?
That's what I said before. I said don't get tight like they did in the AFC Championship game. Get Lamar on the edge because they have the ultimate threat at quarterback. I think Lamar is a bigger threat than any other quarterback in the league because, one, he doesn't run to the middle of the field and get himself hit. He runs down the sideline and he gets out of bounds. And he gets out quick and you can't catch him. So now as soon as he does that, if he'd have done that Riley Leonard in the championship game, ran the ball 9 times.
Yep, one drive.
Can you imagine if they would have called a couple like bootlegs with Lamar? And we talk about DeMar Hamlin when he blitzed off the edge. We've seen plenty of times where that corner misses Lamar. And it's just chaos on top of chaos on top of chaos behind it. And it's like,
right
now you got Bateman just standing in the end zone, waving his arms wide open, waiting on the ball. It's happened multiple times this year where even in this game where he threw back across his body, I just feel like sometimes I talk about this to my son's basketball team. He's like, sometimes don't call the play. Give direction. Hey, go make a play. Don't be like, yo, we got it. We got to get this kind of play. Like, Lamar, what do you see? Well, listen, I think I can get on the edge on these guys. Hell, call five in a row. I'll run all five. Or let's run this ball eight times, or like they did against Pittsburgh. They ran with like 12 times in a row or something like that on one drive. But I don't think they've ever established that. They got away from it because Derrick Henry was going to stop on first and second down. And they scrapped their game plan. Their 15-play script, yeah. They didn't go through it. They stopped using it.
Yeah, and this is the type of playoff football that Josh Allen needs to play. And, you know, this is when he plays the best, is when they go with that. We talked about Justin Herbert game plan where don't make the mistake. Tuck it if you got to. Toss it away if you, you know. So you can hold a team like Baltimore at bay if you force three turnovers. You know, because now you're making them chase the possessions. Even though it's a close game, they're chasing the possessions, which causes things like Lamar's fumble, where, you know, we were talking about this off air, you know, so I was making the point of, like, as a coach, I have to tell you, like, hey, we're down one. We need to foul, you know, off the inbound with, you know, 4 seconds left. But I shouldn't have to say that. That should be known. You know, like, it should be known. We're down one. We got to foul. We got to stop the clock. But as a coach, that's your job. Whereas John Harbaugh's job, to some degree, and Mr. Logical pointed out to me, it's an unrealistic demand, but I'm going to demand it anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like, you might just got to tell Lamar, hey, we're in field goal range right now, because they were. You know, if it's not there, you know, I ain't necessarily telling you to take the sack, but just be smart. You know what I mean? And then throw the ball away if you can. But Lamar,
they do tell him that. And I think he just can't turn it off. No. What I think, like I said, I think they tell him things that aren't, I think what they tell him don't align with his instincts.
Right. That's what I'm saying. He can't control it. But
the problem is when I'm out there in that war and that battle, I'm storming Normandy. I need my instincts. Yes, you have training. Yes, you have protocols. But his instincts got him this far. He's probably on his third MVP. That DeMar Hamlin blitz, maybe if the field is a little warmer, he gets out of that. Tonight, you know, this last game, it was unfortunate. He couldn't get out of it. I believe he tried to put both hands on the ball so he can wiggle his way out of it. He's like, I can't wiggle with both, like, you know, the ball waving around. So let me get both hands on it, wiggle my way out. I just think the sequence was off because I think he tried to get his foot out, knocked the ball out of his hand, and was like, shit. And then Von Miller picked it up, flashback to, you know, 2008, whenever he was in the combine running the 40. Then he was looking up. I saw his head was up. I'm like, because I thought Justice Hill was going to be able to, once again, having Justice Hill in the game just basically lets the defense know you're going to pass. Just throwing it out there, Baltimore. I don't know. I'm just a dude who watches football.
Hey, he had 50 rush yards on six carries the other day.
and every single time, it's like, we know what you're doing with him in the game. That's why the one time he popped like a 20-some yard run, I was like, okay, cool. But every other time he's in there, pretty much no. Like, it's, especially if it's a passing down, you're not running a keeper or anything with Lamar. You're trying to get the ball to him. Because if you're going to have a pass blocking back in there, I'd have the 6'4", 250-pound guy in there to pass block.
All right, so stay there. Given all the things that we talked about earlier this season when Baltimore was struggling, how many carries do you think Derrick Henry had in that game?
I know that number is less than 20, and we know the 20, they're 9-0. When it's less than 20, they lose.
There you go.
Unfortunately,
16 times.
The three turnovers it speeds you up.
But the game was always with, you know, they didn't have to get out of their playbook.
Inside the 5-yard line, they were getting stopped on first down, like from the first play, because he popped 80-something yards on the first play in the 35.
Right, the first game, yeah.
And I think when that didn't work, it's like Ivan Drago in the Rocky movies. When he was killing people with that right hand, it was like, bet. But then when he couldn't knock Rocky out with it, he was like, oh, it's like, this is a different match. Like, yo, just keep hitting him with the fucking, the right hand still knocked other people out. It's killed some people.
Right.
It's still your same right hand. Like, Derrick Henry is still your killer punch.
Hear that, Deontay?
Just run a different play. Maybe instead of running that same play, pop a counter on there. Pop something to where, if, because we'll talk about the Philadelphia game.
But what do we say, right? Talk to your brother.
Because who did something? Like, Saquon, because, you know, I'll go in the bounce around, but we'll get to it. But just real quick, there was a play, Orlovsky broke it down on ESPN, and he was like, people talk about Jalen Hurts' performance, but Jalen Hurts checked to a run play. He was like, it was supposed to go to the left. He looked up and was like, there's a lot of linebackers on this side. And he looked to his right and was like, it's only a safety on this side. Hey, check that. Come over here. And I might have, I think he had like Lane Johnson out blocking the safety. It's like, this is a no-brainer. Because they had, and Orlovsky broke it down simply. He was like, it was a bunch of big guys over here and smaller guys here. So Jalen said, I'm going to send my big guys over here with Saquon. Touchdown. This Baltimore has to lock that in because Derrick Henry is always, he's literally, I mean, one guy out of place on for a big run, two guys kind of in the way, but if they're safeties or not Matt Milano, that's still a 12-yard run. That's still Matt downhill.
Milano,
you know,
Matt Milano, who didn't play the first time they played Baltimore.
He just, and when he was like, okay, Milano spying Lamar. Cool. We all saw it. Quarterback design run, run a guard right at the linebacker. Make the linebacker have to be shifty on a guard and then regroup and tackle your the shiftiest running back of all time.
Right.
Just throwing it out there. I mean, it seems like a simple thing. Like, it's crazy. I play dudes on Madden, and they'll play with Baltimore, and I'm like, with Lamar, you should win every game. Because it's some shit I can't. You can't guard.
Right.
Like, if
right.
he rolls out deep enough, it's like no defensive lineman is going to get there. Just don't try to just run right at my guy. Like, I got the spy on. Just wait. This one dude just standing there. That's one dude who's not in coverage. He's not guarding any space. He is literally just one guy out there. So now you're playing. He's just standing there. Like, Milano's just like, he's moving, but he's not guarding anybody else. If you run a crosser there, drags there, anything right behind him,
right?
He's only focused on Lamar. And it's, I just feel like you could have exploited that better, considering every passing down, it felt like that's what he was doing.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll come back. You know, we were going to talk about Harbaugh a little bit, but we'll save that. You know, but you brought up the Rams and Eagles, you know, and the Rams fans and people on TV have been killing me all week. Or I guess it's Tuesday. But, you know, they're like, besides those two big plays, the Rams held Saquon to 50 yards. And it's like, look, he ran for 255 the first time you played. He broke these big touchdowns on you and finished this game with 205. So that means in two games this season, he ran for 450 yards against you. You know, then you know.
1,000 yard season is a benchmark for a running back.
Yeah.
He ran 455 in two games.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? So Quinyon Mitchell went down early, you know, shoulder injury. We'll see if he's back. I think he will be back, but we'll see. But that changes your formula if you're Matt Stafford, especially if you're the type of quarterback that has struggled in the weather, has struggled in the snow. Maybe having a Quinyon Mitchell out will help you. And guess what? He threw for 324 yards. But that was kind of the problem, is that it always felt like the Rams were playing catch-up even when they weren't.
When I was watching the game, what I was thinking is that it felt like I was saying, like, did I say that this is what they were going to do? Because it felt like what Philly was doing is exactly what I had laid out in my predictions, that they were going to run Jalen for 5 or 6 yards, get down, give the ball to Saquon, run Jalen again, get to the tush push, get the 3rd and 2, get the 2nd and 1, throw a few passes. I think A.J. Brown is probably already packing his bags, so no matter what level of success they achieve this season.
Well, maybe we'll find out this weekend.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, if it's wrapped up after this weekend, I could definitely see. I don't know what his contract is looking like, but I imagine that a team that needs like a dynamic wide receiver and they like to throw the ball around a lot, I think they'll be calling Philly, because I believe he's done. Because he says something like, I wouldn't wish – they won the game in the snow, and I read a quote. Like, granted, I didn't see a video. I just read a quote that said, I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. It's like, you're not having any fun there. Everybody else is like, yo, I was having fun. It's like playing in the snow. It's like being a kid. I don't think he's having the amount of fun there that he probably used to have. I don't know if the relationships are that tenuous. But I do remember like watching the game thinking like they're doing exactly what I said I would do if I was calling the game plan. Like, listen, I'll throw 20 something passes, but I'm gonna run Jalen on 1st or 2nd down, get it to 2nd and 6, 2nd and 4. I don't know why, when they were up 28-22 and Saquon ran the ball for about 3 yards or so, and they were like 2nd and 7, maybe 2nd and 8, why you would call a bootleg and then take that big sack and end up being like 3rd and 17. I'm like, just keep it simple. Like, and I get that you wanted to ice the game there. You get that ball to Goddard, or you get that ball to Kachera, whatever the other Titans name is. I don't know who's running that flag route. But you get that rollout, but you had your right-handed quarterback in the snow bootlegging to his left.
Right.
You know, and then he had to take the sack because, he, I don't care how many cleats you put in those Jordan people wears. Like, he wasn't going to be able to shift in fresh, slushy East Coast
snow. Yeah, that stuff was coming.
If you roll him to the right. Like, for some reason, these offensive coordinators want to be so creative. It's like, dog, this isn't a painting. This is football. Like, it doesn't need to be artsy and pretty and just like, oh my God, we want to hang this play in a museum. It's like, cool. I got this 230-pound quarterback, smart, squats 600 pounds. I got a running back that makes men Google over his quads. Just give him the ball up the middle behind this offensive line who all receive all pro votes. Like, why am I doing anything cute? These tight ends are cool. Put 3 of them in there, have them block for one of these 200-pound runners I have. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah. I don't know why you needed to throw the ball. Like, why'd you only do that just to look like you're being more inventive? Like, no, I want to run the ball, because if Jalen Carter doesn't swim the center, they lose that game. Stafford's getting that ball in the end zone.
Right.
Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua were killing him on those last 2 drives.
And that's why the Rams have no reason to hang their heads. I was actually going to finish on that, because you look at their roster, you see a Puka, Kyron Williams, Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, Kobe Turner. You know, they got Omar Spates at linebacker, Quentin Lake, Cam Kitchens, and then you go. They all under 25?
Yeah, but do you have your 38, 39-year-old coach coming back with your –
Well, that's what I was about to bring up.
37, 38.
That's what I was about to bring up. That's the only thing. You got to get the next quarterback right. That's the caveat to what I was saying.
But you keep Jimmy Garoppolo.
He's not going to be there another – what? I give Stafford, like, literally 1 more year.
I give Stafford this week to make a decision. I can – like, losing – might make him want to keep going.
Yeah.
But maybe he got to see how his body feels in the
week. Yeah, because he's had some injuries the last
2 years. He's been wearing that sleeve for the last couple of years. Last offseason, going into the 2023-2024 season, he was throwing a Nerf ball because he was rehabbing from surgery. So he's at practice throwing a Nerf ball. Right. So it's like, is he going to Andrew Luck and be like, listen, I'm sick of doing this rehab stuff? Or is he going to be like Aaron Rodgers, like, listen, I'm going to die on my shield and coming back? But that also, that's probably also predicated on a coach. Like, who influences who? Does Stafford go to McVay and say, "Hey, man, I'm with it for one more year if you are," or if McVay's like, "Listen, man, I'm with it for one more year if you are."
You know, and I know that you've brought that up, is that McVay could be a surprise out of there, you know, just on his own accord, because, you know, we know that he tried to do that one day when they won the Super Bowl. Yeah. All right, Chris. Okay. You're wilding out already. I love it. You know, but of course, taking it back to Saturday night, Mr. Logical was out here on these social medias talking about, and see my partner apologize for not picking his team to win. I seen that shit.
Yeah,
I seen that shit. I ain't apologizing for nothing. I ain't apologizing for nothing, because look, at the end of the day, I was way too ecstatic to feel so somber. You know, because when I look at the Detroit Lions, it was one of those things where it just ain't feel right. You know, like, and you know, there is something to be said for all the defensive injuries that they have. But there was something to that, right? Because we go back and we look at these teams in NFL history and you're like, hey, no way that 49er team from last year doesn't make the playoffs. You know, obviously injuries happen. That's a whole nother story, but here we are. You know, like, because I was having a conversation with people earlier where they said, John Harbaugh, get the Ravens back to the Super Bowl. And I said, maybe. This ain't guaranteed. You know, they made it to the AFC Championship game last year. The way they went out, you know, it ain't guaranteed. You know, we've literally seen teams.
The ball hit Andrews in both hands going backwards.
And remember that, you know. Yeah, like, you know, like these things happen. These things happen over the course of a season and over a course of a career. So these teams that we're used to being here, this could be the last year that we see this. You know, because
are you predicting that this is the beginning of Detroit's demise?
I am not predicting that just yet.
Okay.
But I'm just
I heard it a couple times.
I think we could see the rumblings of it. You know, like with the NBA, right? Before the Timberwolves made that dumbass trade, you know, we saw Anthony Edwards, even though they lost last year, he got humbled last year. But it was one of those things, if you are the type of person that believes, you gotta go through that and pay your dues to and come back.
Two years ago when he threw the chair and somebody tried to sue him for like $150,000 when he lost to the Nuggets in the first round, they came back. But then his team botched it by making this silly-ass trade this year. So Detroit's in a unique position because they had so many injuries that there's probably not a lot of guys that can really leverage. I don't know what everyone's contract situation was. But I think
I talked about this the other day too.
We talked about the 49ers when they lost the Super Bowl last year. Everyone made it all the way through the Super Bowl. So now all these contract negotiations, these talks can ramp.
Yeah, like just as free agents, they got Tim Patrick, Marcus Davenport, their right guard, a defensive I can't say his name, Uzurike, Derek Barnes, Carlton Davis. Like, all of them are free agents. But a lot of
those guys were already on IR, right?
Yeah.
Card Davis on. So that's what I mean. Is like, so you can look to, well, this guy went out week 12, and his replacement gave us this. So, like, you know, I know, like, in the NBA, they call it war, like, wins above replacement, something like that. So if they're looking at, like, okay, Carlton Davis was a free agent. He went out week 12 or something like that. And for the last six games, you know, we inserted this corner, second-year guy at a Chattanooga State or something, and he was able to give us pretty much what we got out of Carlton Davis, and we're paying him $712,000. So we'll keep him and not re-sign guys. So it could be a situation where you found out that your replacements that you had on defense can take the next step. But they could take that next step for less than a few million dollars each.
Right.
And then you can bolster that offense. So if your guard goes, you can just grab a guard from another team. You know, so I think that they have that because they have the coach in place. They got the wide receiver in place. They got the skill position guys. They're young. I like the quarterback. Jared Goff just had a bad game. It was a couple of throws he kind of forced. But I believe he forced it because he feels like we can score with the best of them. I just don't think they thought that Washington was going to go for fourth downs that many times and be that effective. Like, even I was watching.
Yeah, because I was complaining about the fourth downs against Tampa.
I was watching the game, and the stat came up. They were 20 or 23 on the season. And I was watching the game, and Ava was like, every time they converted one, she was like, 20 of 24, 21 of 24. She was like, 22 of 25. She just kept repeating the stats.
Right.
It was like, I'm like, it is crazy that those are like Madden numbers. And I think Jared Goff's mistakes were coming.
See how he do me, y'all? I gave y'all that stat 2 weeks ago, and he giving it to somebody else.
No, it popped up on the screen during the game. So when it popped up on the screen during the game, and she just kind of went with it. But I was like, looking at it, like, that's a crazy looking stat considering, you know, you watch so much football. You know, this is your team.
Right.
I watch my team. I don't think Atlanta's gone for 23 fourth downs in 2 years. And they definitely haven't converted 20 out of 23. Like, to be honest, like, it just doesn't, it's not a thing that they,
right,
that they do. But yeah, so I think that was the thing that surprised him, was like how effective he was going to be. The one throw he threw to Brown, where like the defender's hand was over his face, over his face mask.
Yeah.
And he caught it. It was like, this is a, and like when that happened, I was like, okay, this is a wrap. And then the interceptions, and then Ben Johnson with the reverse to Jameson Williams. Like,
hey, and remember, like, you saw, that's what I put in the chat too. I told you it was going to be Jameson Williams.
As soon as I saw the trick plays, I was like, your voice popped in my head. It was like, well, it's Dan Campbell and the Detroit Lions. They don't call those trick plays. I'm like, as long as they don't call trick plays, like,
oh, but that option play was ill. Where they kind of faked like a pitch, or they gave it to the running back, and then he gave it to Jameson Williams. It was just like, bro, that's just creativity beyond all measure.
That's just speed on speed. Because like, I gotta respect Jahmyr Gibbs going to the right as a linebacker. So I'm going hard to my left, and then the ball gets to another guy who's just as fast and just as diabolical in the open field. And then he did the celebration. Was like, bro. You know, it's like they grabbed him. Like, he got two humps before they grabbed him. But, yeah, I didn't like the being down 38-28 and calling that play. Because I was talking about it today at work. I was like, that's one of those situations where you have to tell the player, if it's not their run. That way, because I think sometimes when you call a play, the players want to make the play work. So it's like, we call this play. If it's not there, just take off. Because I think once he gets that ball, the first thing he's thinking is, it's not there. And I'm going to just take off. I think that will come into his mind versus, he's going to be here, throw it this way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a terrible decision. That's the first quarter call.
Yeah, and that's why I got into an argument earlier, because I didn't blame Ben Johnson for the loss, you know, but what I wanted to ask you was, even though they scored 31 points, even though they had over 500 total yards, do you feel that Ben Johnson has some culpability in this loss?
No. I think eventually the hens will come home to roost, or whatever they're saying.
The chickens come home to roost.
Chickens come home to roost. It's just too many. You got the injuries, and like I said, you had a team playing with house money. Once Washington started going for it on fourth down, and I think Jane Daniels probably was going to the sideline like, listen, this is what I'm seeing. And then him and office coordinator Dan Quinn, they were probably communicating like, I'm seeing the same thing. I'm seeing that we can get – they can't stop these routes, because they ran the one to Brown was across to the right. Yeah, then the other – they ran another one from right to left.
Then there was the screen, the scary Terry.
And then the screen, the scary Terry. And then they started hitting Eckler out of the backfield. Mm-hmm. It was like, we're hitting all these deep shots. So now let's hit the short stuff. And it just was a perfect like combination. It was like jab, jab, body blow, right hook, right. It was like they were just Detroit, right. They're trained. They were trained to do what they were doing. But Washington was just hitting them in spots that they weren't protecting every drive. And then you come out, your season's on the line. You have 15 wins on the year. Number one seed. You were up 3 possessions last year. Your coach is just probably was going ape in the locker room. And then you come out and now Jared Goff, like that interception where he got blocked. I know people are saying that was a penalty. I get it if he threw the pick and someone turned and they were like seeking him out to hit him. But he was coming to make the tackle.
Yeah, and
I don't know how the NFL, and I understand the construct of he's defenseless, but he's the last line of defense. If you don't block him, granted, I'm pretty sure he still scores, but he's coming to make the tackle. He's no different in my mind than the tight end coming to make the tackle
Right.
Because like I said, if he was on the other hash and the guy just blocked him into the ground, drove him into the ground, I can understand like the letter of the law. But once you're coming to make the tackle, then I could just block you in any kind of way I want. Granted, did he put a little bit more ass into it because he knew it was Jared Goff? I mean, like, I'm not trying to be like, if the other team doesn't have their most effective player, then that increases our odds of winning.
Right.
I'm not saying it was a dirty hit, but I guarantee you it was like he didn't hold back.
No, not at all. And
I don't want to hurt this guy.
Yeah.
Who would? I'm here to make the tackle. I'm turning to make the block. All I saw was a blue jersey, and I made the hit.
Yeah. And I saw Washington just take advantage. They did what some teams can't do, which is take advantage of your mismatches. They knew that the secondary was going to be the Achilles heel. Attack it. And then on the other side, the reason I brought up Ben Johnson is because, they still ran for 200 yards in this game. So even if you take that, Jameson Williams touchdown out, that was 62 yards. They still had a pretty healthy rushing game, So that's where sometimes you look at this and you're like, hey, look, maybe we have to invert ourselves. Like, we're the team that used to jump out. Nobody can stop us. We play pinball. Now we're playing against this team that is doing that, and we have the ability to run the ball. Maybe we need to put some other skin on for a second.
Yeah.
But these offensive coordinators want to get cute.
I don't think he called a bad game. I think that the pass, that trick play was just one too many. The trick play that got him the touchdown, I literally would have just ran that again just to see. Because I think that would have been more effective than the throw. I would have ran that same play going opposite direction. Because teams don't do that. I also heard Rich Eisen. It was like, maybe you don't use all your trick plays throughout the year. Because I said in a few games, I'm like, you guys are calling trick plays up 17.
Like, somebody watching that somewhere.
Yeah, save that. Like, save these things where you got tight tackles coming in, eligible, and stuff like that. So I don't think anything they can hold the rest of their hat on. It's just a matter of they blitz Sam Darnold in the Minnesota game, and it was effective.
Right.
They blitz C.J. Stroud and forced him into a few mistakes as well. They just couldn't get Jaden into the mistake that they wanted because I just feel like the Commanders, they were just a step ahead on what they wanted to do. Like, everything was quick. It was this route. Okay, this is my one-on-one matchup. I'm taking it. Oh, this is my check down. I'm a little Texas route with the running back out of the backfield to Austin Eckler. Great, great pass receiver. I'm running the ball, Brian Robinson. Many men want to, wish death upon me. or just getting the ball to Scary Terry. It's like we talked about with Philly. AJ Brown just doesn't look happy. It's like, call a screen pass for him.
Right.
Like call a pass to where you're one missed tackle, one bad angle away from a touchdown, because that should have been wrapped up. Because both defenders that were getting blocked, he jumped in between the two Commanders players and the Detroit players that were getting blocked. So they read it properly. Is it they all took bad angles and one missed tackle and it was a right. touchdown. So, you know, I just think that they were just on that. I think they were on it. They were comfortable, even with the failed fourth down attempt with Marcus Mariota, because Robinson, he went to go do the tush push, and Mariota's looking to flip the ball back. That didn't rattle them. Like, James was on the sideline, like, oh, yeah, okay, next time we'll just do this. Cool, all
right. Right.
Can I get a towel? Can I get a
towel? Yeah,
and pressed on with the next drive, and it's like, touchdown.
And that's the biggest thing. Like, I remember, right, I had a girlfriend one time. And she was so swagged out, and like she made me feel like I was a different person, like I was on top of the world, like nothing could bring me down. I was the coolest dude in the world. That's the energy that Jaden walks around with, is like, you know what? It don't even matter. Like we're going to move on. We're going to do this because he has something, but his comes intrinsically. You know what I mean? Where it's inside of him, and this
talk
is
the about difference. That video, that Arizona State
yeah.
locker room video. I talked about it all through the draft process last year. But that video is, if I'm a college coach or a high school coach, I'm playing that video, and then I'm showing what Jane Daniels did after that video. Every one of my leaders of my football team, maybe the whole team, but definitely the leaders of the football team, the guys who are going to carry the mantle for whatever my organization is. I'm like, look how this young man handled this. He probably was like 21, maybe.
Yeah, maybe 20. Maybe, yeah.
If that, you know, like young, right. I think it might have been around COVID time. So it was like very young man, and to have, like, from what I can recall, like at least 4 to 5 people in his space while he's trying to clean out his locker, telling him he sucks.
Yeah.
And he goes out here and wins the Heisman. Second overall draft pick. And now he's a good game away from being in the Super Bowl.
He gave them that jolt. I guess, you know, I don't want to, you know, do the hyperbole thing, but I would imagine it's sort of similar to Irvin Magic Johnson going into LA and just that charm, that personality that we will almost like Dion in a lot of ways, like that, not like we strive to, or we're going to try our best. It's like, you know what? This is the goal. We're going to do it. So Jaden Daniels walks.
Randy Moss in New England. New England was a successful organization. Randy Moss changed how they operated going forward. Randy Moss changed how Tom Brady played football after that. Tom Brady never played football the same way after he had Randy Moss in the locker room for those 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Right. And
his numbers went, he's 100,000 passing yards now. He probably was on pace 60, 65. Like if you look at some of Tom Brady's old numbers, those years they were in the Super Bowls, I think he was throwing like 26, 27 touchdowns, 9 picks, 28 and 11. Like, and then he gets Randy Moss and his 50 touchdowns. He was like, oh, this is how it feels. Super Bowls are great, but having this guy in the room is like, oh, now I can, this guy here, I could put some 5'8 guys over here and get them open and still throw it over here. And he never looked back. He constantly looked for guys who were that dynamic. Gronk, Aaron Hernandez, it's like something about having these kind of guys in the locker room. And Dan Quinn, I think Dan Quinn going the ups and downs, we're going to talk about the 28-3, how it fell apart essentially in his last game in Dallas. But if you look at it, the totality of his coaching career as a defensive coordinator, it wasn't great defensively in Washington for like this past season.
Right.
But something about what he does and what he instills, and I remember, as a Falcons fan, I remember the year he went to the Super Bowl around like week 10. I think there was reports that he basically kind of like just dumbed down and scrapped most of the defensive playbook and simply said, Go do what you do. You're fast. You tackle. Run to the ball. All of you. You hit hard. You run to the ball. You hold them up. You try and knock it out. And you hit them hard. That's why they called. LeGarrette Blount doesn't fumble. Ripped it right out of his hand in the Super Bowl. Because he was like, all of this other stuff is cool. You run fast. You're a fast linebacker. You're undersized. But you run. You tackle well. Get to the ball. When we run nickel, all right, Keanu, you come down in the box. I want you hitting people hard. Rico, you control the back end. Right. Got it? Good. And then they were up 28-3. Alfred on that interception came off of his route that he was covering. Instinctively, like, yo, that's when the coach tells you just go play ball. He was looking. He came off his route, picked that, pick six. They go up 21-3. But I think that's what Dan Quinn does. It's going to be hard making my decision for who's going to win this game this weekend. But honestly, I'm liking short of like just Sirianni, which, like I said, he's probably a good coach. He's probably on my Sean Payton level. Like, I don't really fuck with you, but I got to admit that you're good at what you do. So someone showing me the signal. I guess I'll show the signal. Yeah. Dan Quinn.
Decision ain't hard for me, but we'll get to that on Friday. Ladies and gentlemen, he is Mr. Logical. Do not bring feelings to where he brought Notre Dame and Ohio State last night.
Yeah, listen. Listen. Gotta stay true to my logic.
We will have picks for you. We will have around the association. College football really over. I saw it already. 214 days until the first game. Oof. Oh, real quick, Mr. Logical, did you see who the favorite to win the national title is next year?
Ohio State.
Did you see who number two is?
Georgia?
Archie! Yes, it's time for the next edition of The Overrated Manny. We love you. See you in a few days. Peace.